to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, August 19th, 2018, by the Reverend Eric Williams.
Is told of a school which a vice principal's job came open, and two teachers from that school both applied for the position. One teacher had 20 years of experience in that school, and the other had only five, and so everyone assumed that the teacher with 20 years of experience would be hired and not the less experienced teacher. But when the time came, the five-year teacher was hired as vice principal. Upset, the 20-year veteran went to the committee and said, "What gives? Why did you hire this person who had so much less experience?" And they said to him, "Yes, it's true, he had 5 years of experience, but you only had 1 year of experience that you repeated 20 times." Sometimes it's better not to ask. Experience is one part of what makes up wisdom, but not the whole. Experience has to be wedded to knowledge and needs to be integrated for a person to gain true wisdom. We think about wisdom in lots of different ways. I read a quote from Benjamin Franklin in his typical droll fashion. He wrote, "Who is wise? The one that learns from everyone. Who is powerful? The one who governs their passions. Who is rich? The one who is content. Who is that? Nobody." And yet that's not quite true, is it? There are people who we look to as sources of wisdom. I mean, I can point to at least a half dozen people in my life as real exemplars of wisdom. And I was trying to figure out what made them different, what gave them that capacity. My family and I were blessed to know a priest in New York State. He had been a Presbyterian minister. He had been the dean or professor at a seminary in Richmond, Virginia. He came to New York State to run the Department of Religion at the Chautauqua Institution, enormously gifted and erudite and scholarly person. But he had taken all that knowledge and he had connected it to his own personal spiritual life. And it produced in him the fruits of wisdom. And he became a mentor for me and I think for our whole family, a great example of someone who was so deeply rooted that he was not shaken when things happened. He was there when 9/11 happened, and I, as a young pastor with a brand new baby, was just overwhelmed. I didn't know what to do. What do you do when you're scrambling and trying to know how to respond to such an overwhelming event? And he was able to calm me down and to help out and to convene a prayer service that same night at our church that he and I led together. I don't think I could have made it through that experience without him, without his groundedness, his experience, the ability to look back and to look forward and not to be ruffled, right? Because so often we're just reacting to the immediate stimuli, to the immediate crises of life. We're just like ping pong balls bouncing back and forth from one thing to another. And the person who has wisdom is able to slow down and to see things with a deeper and broader and wider perspective. It's rare to give Ben Franklin his due, but it's not impossible. It's not completely absent from the world. I've been rereading a particular favorite book of mine this past week. If you go to the bookstore, you go to the business section or the self-help section, there are thousands of books, thousands of people who are trying to tell you how wise they are and make a buck by selling you their particular scheme, their plan. Just sign up with me and I'll give you wisdom. But one of the ones that's really stood the test of time for me is Stephen Covey, whose book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and there have been many other books, I go back to from time to time, because for me, it's a book that's actually rooted in real wisdom. And he talks about the capacity that we can gain to be more effective. And I think what he's really talking about is wisdom. The capability of looking ahead and seeing our life with the end in mind and working backwards to align our lives with those goals. He talks about the fact that we all are sort of driven by our to-do list. I've probably told this story before, but it's one of my favorites. You know, my dad would scribble down stuff during the sermon. Did I tell this story before? And the priest, we had a very pompous priest, and he would look down from this very high pulpit and see my dad writing away. And after church, he said, "Ken, I'm so proud of you for taking notes during my sermon." Because this priest knew that he had a lot of wisdom to share, and my dad probably could use some of it. And I didn't have the heart to tell him, nor did my dad, that what he was working on was his weekly to-do list. I'm not sure my dad ever really heard a word that priest said. But he was there every week. Our to-do list can drive us. And Stephen Covey says in his book that we need to be careful that we're not only attending to the urgent things. I got to get a gallon of milk. I got to run this errand. I've got to do this thing, and this thing. We forget when we're just working on urgent things, which could be important or unimportant, to focus on the non-urgent but very important parts of life. The things that actually make a difference in our long-term health and our ability to grow in wisdom. And what are those things? An old priest once said to a group that I was in, he said, "You know, as preachers, you're always filling the bucket. You're coming up with stories and insights, and you're trying so hard to share that water by filling the bucket and filling the bucket. Be sure that you also take time to fill the well, because the well can run dry if you're always filling the bucket." What did he mean by that? He meant that to sustain a life of preaching, and I would say a life of wisdom, a life that is whole and integrated, we need to pay attention to those things that give life and vitality. Filling the well for me means attending to those non-urgent but really important things. Eating well, not junk food, but food that really gives nourishment. Sleeping enough. Exercising, spending time with friends and family, worshiping God, taking time for prayer, taking time to turn off the electronic devices, which are really perfectly designed to keep us jumping after everything that is urgent and not important. How many texts really need to be responded to that very second? But we're more and more conditioned to be living this very knee-jerk life instead of filling the well, instead of attending to the things that truly give life. When was the last time you took an hour just to be still and enjoy the presence of God and the beauty of nature, or in your bedroom, just to be still and let your mind slow down and quiet itself? For me, that's part of filling the well. It's part of this ability to grow in wisdom. For the ancient Hebrews, for the Jews, wisdom was ultimately not something that we could manufacture, even through great books like Stephen Covey's or through the habits of our lives. Wisdom was an attribute of the divine, of God. It was only from God that we could gain wisdom. And it didn't always go along with age. Remember the story of Solomon. As a young boy, Solomon prayed for wisdom, and God gave him wisdom. Wisdom is something that can come at any age, and for some people, never comes at any age. just experience and living, like that teacher who repeated his same year 20 times, is not a given. It's about integrating our lives. It's about seeking to know the God who is the source of wisdom, for whom wisdom is a characteristic. In the Old Testament, wisdom is personified as the female part of the divine, the part that was present at creation, the part of God that inspired the prophets, that led Moses and the children of Israel through the wilderness and into the promised land. That was wisdom. Wisdom who served a meal of real food, which was a symbol of God's nature and wisdom. For Jesus, this is personified in his life. And that's why he's so shocking to the Jewish authorities, because he's claiming to actually be the embodiment of that divine wisdom, to be the bread of heaven that gives life to the world, that nourishes us with the presence and life and wisdom of God. When we come forward this morning to this altar rail and stretch out our hands, we'll be receiving a little piece of bread, the very opposite of junk food. It is the bread of heaven, which gives life to the world, which invites us more deeply into a relationship with Jesus, the personification of the wisdom of God. This meal is what strengthens us to fill the well, to put down deep roots that enable us to withstand the storms of life, that gives us the perspective to look back over our lives and forward into the unimaginable future without reacting to every crisis, but instead to be still and know that he is God. He feeds us with himself and strengthens us for the journey wherever it takes us. May we be inspired to grow in wisdom ourselves, to take this food and to share it, to use it to grow as we are able into the people, the whole integrated, mature people that God intends for us to be. And perhaps, like my friend Ross back in New York, to be an inspiration to others who are going through their own crises and who desperately need the kind of wise mentors that perhaps we can be.